Our next speaker is Angela Bader. She's an anesthesiologist at the Brigham. And one thing that we really like about ERAS is that it's a protocol, so it's standardization, and it's multidisciplines. It's surgery and just probably as important is anesthesia. So she's going to tell us about some of the key things in anesthesia. And we know that hospitals that do not get anesthesia involved in this basically cannot get ERAS to work. So please welcome Angela.
First of all, I want to thank Dr. Wick for this invitation. I think it's a real privilege to be able to speak for this group. And what I want to talk about, I'm not going to go over the precise clinical issues with anesthesia because I think that the previous speakers have covered many of those things very well. But what I want to do is give you some practical suggestions for perhaps how you can build consensus and how we can align better in terms of implementing this kind of clinical pathway, ERAS, and also looking ahead towards other clinical pathways. So I think that I look at ERAS as a big success story in terms of how multidisciplinary collaboration can improve healthcare value, where value is defined as outcomes over cost. And I think the way that we as people in surgical specialties, and I think anesthesia, it started as a surgical subspecialty, I think it is kind of, and we need to look at this as what we're really doing now is population health. And I think that what we need to do is identify groups for which evidence-based, collaborative, multidisciplinary pathways can improve value. And I think that ERAS is, in a way, a kind of population health because we're identifying patients who are having a certain surgery and using evidence to implement a collaborative clinical pathway. And I do hope one of the goals of my talk is not just to talk about building consensus for ERAS, but to maybe start the discussion of even going beyond ERAS and thinking about ways that we can collaborate to transition from volume to value in terms of not just doing the volume, but looking at the value and not just immediate value, but long-term value. And we need to think about this as payments are going to be increasingly based on services that contribute to improvements in individual and or population health value and target resources for at-risk surgical patients who can benefit from these pathways. And I think ERAS is a great example of that. So this article is from Duke, and I don't know if anyone here is from Duke, but I think that Duke is a real leader in developing these collaborative pathways. And I want to give you some suggestions on how we started at the Brigham and maybe some things that can help you build consensus. So the first thing that we did was we identified champions. And what we decided to do was we had a surgical champion who was Dr. Ron Blade, we had an anesthesia champion, and we had a nursing champion. And I think identifying champions in the beginning went a long way towards changing the culture in terms of not thinking about ERAS as, quote, like a surgical thing that the surgeons want to do, but thinking of it as a combined pathway where the patients will benefit. Then what we did was we formed an ERAS committee that was led by these champions, and we started in colorectal, and Dr. Blade is a colorectal surgeon, and as groups came on board, every protocol was vetted by the committee. So for example, we had a colorectal protocol that was our first ERAS protocol, and that was sort of vetted by the committee, and so it standardized everything. It meant that, you know, different colorectal surgeons weren't making their own versions. It got anesthesia buy-in. And then as different surgical specialties wanted to buy in, when they saw the results that were happening in colorectal, they each identified a champion, for example, when we added urology, when we added gynecology, and those champions, again, They may have modified the protocol slightly for their own specialty, but it was vetted by the committee, and everyone was in agreement on incorporating an additional protocol. So right now, we've incorporated a number of surgical specialties using this model, and I would suggest perhaps considering something like that to help change culture, get alignment, and help standardize how the protocols are implemented. And I think the other important thing is thinking about this in the perspective of metrics, because having a sort of central place where everything about ERS lives makes it a lot easier to look at analysis for metrics, identify success and not success, and figure out where the problems are. And the final thing I want to say before I move on to a more general discussion of this approach is one of the hardest buy-ins we actually had was with hospital administration to get funding for the additional resources that need to prime the pump. So I think I really appreciate the speaker that said he started with zero budget and zero time, because that's what we started with too. And part of the problem we had was that we're used to thinking of things in the current payment system, so that the benefits of ERS are going to be in the costs for the hospital stay and beyond, and not necessarily for the surgery reimbursement. So when we asked for example, preoperative clinic nurses to spend more time because they did ERS education, we wanted to give out ClearFast in the pre-op clinic to make sure that the patients had it. So those were things that, to be completely honest, because we're so used to doing budgeting in silos, it was very, very difficult. And Dr. Blade and I had many, many discussions, because I think the way budgets in many hospitals are still done involves these sort of silos where we're not thinking about the impact on healthcare costs outside the silo of sort of the day of surgery. So I would say that it was the metrics and coming back again and again with the metrics that allowed us to gradually get the resources. So I give you those as sort of practical suggestions, and I honestly would be happy to talk about any of this, you know, during the question and answer session in terms of practical ways to gain consensus. So what I would like to propose in my last few minutes here is that I think ERIS is an example of disciplines working together using a standardized clinical pathway that is evidence-based, and then measuring metrics. And the one thing that I think also needs to underlie this is financial metrics. And I know some of our speakers have mentioned that as well. So what I am proposing is that we do this in ERS, but that perhaps in the future we also consider doing this in other collaborative pathways. So for example, just to talk for the last couple of minutes about the Duke program, they look at surgery there from this population management based approach and identifying patients who are in at-risk groups that may benefit from pathways like ERS or other standardized clinical pathways. And they have instituted a number of multidisciplinary collaborative pathways that I would say the basic framework is similar to ERS. For example, preoperative anemia clinic, diabetes clinic, geriatric clinic, et cetera, and I hope that we can consider these kinds of collaborative pathways as our specialties work together more. So this is just a schematic of the framework at Duke, where they basically, after the patient is seen in the surgeon's office, decide how to assign these pathways. And this is a screen of the schematic at the Brigham, where after the surgeon's office visit, we are very actively working with our surgeons to develop these collaborative pathways. And ERIS is number one on the list because that's well known, it's evidence-based, but I just would suggest that this gives us a great opportunity to think about working together in a multidisciplinary way, not just surgery and anesthesia, but geriatrics, hematology, and focusing on the success of ERIS and using that as a model to be really innovative and think about successful collaborations together in the future. Thank you very much.